Welcome to the People Show with Dan Sat and Randeep.
Final hour of the People Show. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. Still to come this hour, we had a conversation with Yannick Hansen, one of our favorite guests. That'll come up a little bit later on if you missed it from earlier in the show. Sports at 6:50's The People Show is presented by your local Grip Auto and Tire location. Winter tire service and expert advice are waiting for you at gripauto.ca today. The news of the week, and it's been percolating for a while as we've followed the story here on the People Show a little bit, but the WTA suspending events in China amidst the concerns surrounding former number one doubles player, five-time Olympian Peng Shuai, whom accused a politician of coercing her into sex about a month ago now. 30 minutes later, that was all removed from social media. And, well, we've not heard a lot since then, and Peng has had limited talks with people outside of China. And when she has not said much other than wasn't true what she had been saying.
Yeah, and on top of that, the message that Peng did come out with as well has been censored and removed on the internet. And discussion of the issue has been censored in China as well. So that whole conversation that's been going on is kind of fallen off the map. And, you know, Steve Simon, who's the head of the WTA, announced that they're basically going to hold off of any tournaments in China, which is a big development, guys. Yeah. Massive development.
Suspending all events in China. I mean, everything we've heard about professional sports leagues, especially here in North America, you know, the WTA is global. They have events everywhere. Yeah. But you think about it from the NHL, NBA, MLB, and even the NFL, maybe less so with the NFL, but certainly the NHL and the NBA have been pretty upfront with the idea, like, we want to be more involved in China. We want to try and tap into that market. And here you have the WTA taking a pretty strong stance of, okay, whatever happened here, we have some issue with it, right? And we're going to pull out until we find out more about this situation. The WTA taking a pretty strong stance, and one that is easy to get behind.
And it's also because it's one of their athletes.
Yes. And, you know, there's a lot of things going on in China that you could certainly have questions about. But when it involves one of your athletes, you have to take a swift response. And the WTA has here, but it really, with the Olympics looming over China, And her being a five-time Olympian, I know Summer Games, sure, but it's hard to ignore the connection there with everything else that's going on with China.
It totally is. This is an issue as we have become more socially aware, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Over the last couple of years, these are things we do have to consider as a sports fan, as people that cover sports as well. And the Olympics, absolutely. It's something that I think when we jump to the conclusion of, all right, athletes are going there. The IOC, when they're making a decision of where it goes next, when their membership is making a decision of where the Olympics are going, you are essentially rewarding a country as well. You're saying you're going to get, you know, financial benefit from this. Mm-hmm. They have a responsibility to make sure that they make a right moral decision. We're not saying sending athletes is a good or a bad thing, but this falls on the IOC to take a leadership position, guys. And the IOC is not alone in this, where, you know, Qatar is a classic example. The World Cup's going there next year. Over 6,500 people have died in the construction of the stadiums in Qatar. And we're talking mostly about temporary foreign workers who come in from the Philippines, Pakistan, India, other places around the world. And the working conditions, It is to allege by, you know, Amnesty International and other organizations that they're deplorable.
Yeah.
People have fallen to their deaths. Not one, not two. We're talking about 6,500 plus. And this is a country that, yeah, human rights records and labor records are not good. F1 this weekend in Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia's got a long list of human rights issues. And Lewis Hamilton mentioned yesterday, I'm not comfortable driving here, but this is the situation that F1 has decided to go with. So, like, I think as we are learning more about this, it's tough to say, all right, that's the world. You got to turn a blind eye and just play sports. No, I think it's a healthy conversation to question whether these organizations, whether they're the IOC, whether it is FIFA, and whether it is F1 and others for that matter, are they making the right decision? Because when we're talking about, you know, sports speaking for something and taking a stand for something, yeah, these, you know, you're essentially rewarding these countries, and you don't have to agree with it. Like, I have a real issue with, you know, some of these decisions. And the Qatar one is a classic one where, you know, there's been family friends that have gone to that country to work. And, you know, a number 6,500 just seems like a lot, but it seems so far away.
Yeah.
But when you actually look at these individuals and some of the records that are, you know, some of the labor records that are going on in some of these countries, you're saying, wait a second, man. Like, how can I get behind an event when this is the cost? Human life is an actual cost of doing business in that country right now for that World Cup.
But here's the thing, though. None of these organizations care, Randy.
But that's
FIFA doesn't care. The IOC doesn't care.
That, is it not?
Well, I suppose, but here's the thing. How much does a consumer want to change it? Because we're sitting here talking about sports, and it's not wrong, right? Hey,
it's our job.
It's our job. Yep. We're talking about the sports aspect of it. But what about the economic aspect of it? Mm-hmm. How many things do you buy and do you get and do you consume that comes from that country that makes life easier on you?
Mm-hmm.
How much of that are you willing to give up?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you shouldn't.
It runs deep.
But what I'm saying here is it's easy to sit here, right, and be like, these sports organizers don't do how dare you not use the moral imperative here?
Yeah.
But how much are you yourself and how much are other corporations and governments doing? Because we hear governments say like, oh, yeah, we're not going to send diplomats to China. Well, you're still going to benefit financially from Coca-Cola or whatever else, whoever else is a sponsor based out of the U.S., based out of the world, that's going to be sponsoring events and venues in China. Right. So it's a global corporate culture here. Right. And I'm with you as far as there should be a moral imperative, but we're sitting here and saying, it's on you, FIFA, right? Do this. All right. Yeah, yeah, you did the right thing. Are you going to be pushing your governments to stop dealing with China, to not consume things from China, which is going to make life harder on you because
you're going to go into your closet and throw out every piece of
And the international economy is so intertwined and reliant on China. Yeah. That's why they act the way they do, because they know no one can touch them and everybody else is going to say, oh, damn you. But at the end of the day, nobody does anything because we're so dependent on them economically. So I'm with you, but I think it's easy to, you know, pontificate on these things and everybody's kind of turning a blind eye in every single economy.
Okay, and I understand the personal side of this because, yes, I'm wearing things that are made who knows where, right?
Yep.
But as a sports organization, and listen, we have our own personal journeys. We're going to make our decisions on what we think, whether we want to visit a place and contribute our money to certain countries. That's a personal choice.
Yep.
But as the Olympic Committee and what they're supposed to stand for, FIFA and what they're supposed to stand for, they are different than an individual. Because
but they haven't shown it in ever.
Sat,
when did they show it?
Sat, my never point is, though, it. If we just say, hey, you know, we got to do this across the board, that's not going to happen. Every single person in Canada is not going to be like, all right, I'm not buying things from this country or this company. Sometimes leaders have to be leaders. And that's what these organizations have to be. They have to be leaders.
Well, the IOC has been to Beijing twice now, or once 2022 rolls around in the Olympics, the Winter Olympics. Mm-hmm. It'll be the second time in 14 years that Beijing has hosted an Olympics.
But it's reflective of how reliant the overall global economy is on China as
100%,
well.
100%. 100% it is. And this has been a problem with the Olympics for a long time. You know, IOC and FIFA are two of the most wretched organizations possible on the planet. And we've seen the effect that they've had. I mean, they both went into Brazil and look at how Brazil has fared in the wake of having an Olympics and a World Cup within a short few years, it's been disastrous.
Greece?
For
Athens
them.
Was
Greece.
This is disaster as well.
They take advantage of these countries and play to their heartstrings and then, you
exactly.
know, leave them in the dust.
That's
after.
All it is. And it's diplomats and politicians and businessmen in those countries with ties that benefit from bringing the Olympics in. And they're happy, but they don't care what it does to the taxpayer and what it does to the country at the end of the day. That's what
yeah.
it is, right?
Should it be on the consumer then to say, I'm not going to watch the Olympics?
Sure.
You know what? I'm not going to, you know, this would kill me personally. You know, being a big supporter of Canadian soccer for so long and watching the men's program be awful for so many years and now to see it have success and get to a World Cup and then just say, you know what, I can't support it. I can't support having a World Cup in Qatar. I want nothing to do with it. But I'm invested in those athletes and what they've
yeah.
done and the successes that they've had. I want to cheer for them. Personally, I've always just chosen, like, I'm not going to think about FIFA. I'm just cheering for the athletes that I've invested my time and sports fandom in, right? It's hard to separate,
yeah.
but I think I, like a lot of people, have chosen to do that because it sucks reading how FIFA and the IOC yeah. have treated countries through their histories.
That is the reality. We do at some point separate the sport from the business of it, right?
Yes.
And unfortunately, you know, ideally, if you're a soccer fan, you're going to watch the World Cup. Ideally, if you're, you know, Olympic hockey fan, you're going to watch it. You're going to say, hey, I love my hockey and go
Olympic
Sidney Crosby,
every
go
year,
Connor McDavid.
Every time the Olympics roll around, we all get around and we wave our flags
yeah.
and this guy won a gold medal.
Honestly,
and this girl
though,
won a gold medal.
And I said this the last Olympics when the NHL didn't send players. I was fine with it. I
yeah.
was more than fine with it. And this is a big reason why I've been saying
yeah.
I'm all for build a World Cup out. You don't need to send, you know,
yep.
you don't need to do that. And as far as the NBA and other leagues go as well,
yep.
do your own thing. It's all about best on best.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So build a new thing. Don't rely on the Olympics. The only athletes I care about are the amateur athletes and the athletes that are competing in sports that don't quite have the same spotlight on them throughout the calendar year, where the Olympics are extremely important
yeah.
for them. Without the
they
Olympics...
They work their whole lives for that.
Exactly. So for them to pursue their passion and be the best they can be in their sports, the Olympics are important for them. Now... that can also be seen as coercive to some degree because you have to kind of be all in on this, you know, corrupt organization like the IOC,
yeah.
right? So you can't really boycott it because if you boycott it, you're shooting yourself in the foot as far as chasing your
yeah.
dream. So what I want to see in an ideal utopian world is every single one of these athletes having a league strong enough for them so they don't have to rely on the Olympics and they can do national events or events every 4 years that are sanctioned by their federations and that they can make money off. But that is a academic utopian idea that's not realistic, right? So as long as the Olympics represent those athletes and give that avenue to those athletes, they have to participate in it. And I'm not going to sit here and say, yeah, don't go and participate in the Olympics because I think you should boycott China. Meanwhile, I'm ordering stuff from Amazon that's coming from
yeah.
China. And, you know, I'm watching other sports, right? You're getting stuff from Nike that has a bad human rights record
yeah.
with their workers. We have
mm-hmm.
that in the past. Like, how many products do we wear, right?
Yeah.
So I hate sitting here and be like, do this. This is the right thing to do. And then you're not living by it yourself, right? I don't want to be a hypocrite about it. So I can't yell at these athletes for going to the Olympics, but I think the athletes in the leagues that have a choice, that don't have to be dependent on the Olympics, like the NBA, like the NHL, they shouldn't participate.
And to be clear, like my take on that is not looking at the athletes. The athletes have earned and worked hard to get to that point. There's a greater responsibility. As a consumer, we have to make sure that we let, you know, people that do vote in the next one, the next bid country for, you know, the World Cup or the IOC or wherever, you have to let those leaders know. Because, yeah, it's unfair to the athlete. I'm not advocating for the athletes to say, hey, sit it out. That's on you. No, of course not. They've worked their whole life on that. But as a consumer, we do have a choice. As a consumer, we can say, hey, IOC, we hold you to a higher standard. Therefore, next time something comes around, social justice does matter. Last 2 years,
mm-hmm.
last couple years, that has been a highlight. And yeah, when I'm making decisions on where I'm going to go watch things or where I'm traveling to,
yeah.
that is something that I'm consciously thinking of. right? Is everybody perfect? No, of course not. We're buying things that sometimes we don't even look where they're made. And that's something that's everybody's personal decision. But the leaders in society, we do have a responsibility to say, hey, you have a decision. Yeah. You're changing lives. In some ways, those lives are being changed, life and death, like they're in Qatar. Mm-hmm. You have a greater responsibility. So I don't think that's, you know, calling out anybody unfairly. These organizations are some of the greasiest on the planet. And I throw F1 in that too.
Yeah.
They're making deals because it creates billions of dollars. But we as the consumer can strive to be better in helping them make those decisions, because the consumer's responsibility is to say, I like what you're doing or I don't like what you're doing.
Well, the North America is a little bit more regulated. It's obviously not perfect, but you see it certainly in European sports. Like, mm-hmm. how deep do you want to take this? You know, Gazprom is a jersey sponsor for your soccer team.
Aramco, which is the oil company in Saudi Arabia, is one of the biggest sponsors in F1.
Right. Which is essentially sport washing. Right.
And I get it. I mean, this text, and it's a good text, says sports are a luxury for functioning society, not a right. Who gives a, you know what, if your dreams to be a professional athlete are crushed? Guess what? People are dying on a daily basis in Qatar. This is far worse than your dream of playing in the World Cup ending. And hey, those things are all true. What I'm saying here is, we can talk about boycotting the Olympics and all that sort of stuff and don't go to the World Cup. But if all the economies still rely on those countries and still work with those countries, what is this doing?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're boycotting and making a move, but then everybody else is going about not doing their things. You know what I mean?
You're boycotting it to show the IOC that don't reward these countries or FIFA, right? Sure, so you still are initiating some sort of change.
You are. I get it. But you are. But as far as actually doing meaningful change, should that be the responsibility of those athletes to say, we're not going to go, when the real decision makers around the world aren't doing anything?
Yeah.
Right? You know what I mean? So, like, if we're talking about, you know, the garnish on the meal that has to change and you can do something about it, but if the, you know, meat and potatoes aren't changing. And I'm not saying, hey, put your head in the sand and say, hey, don't do anything about it. I'm just saying I'm not going to sit here and get mad at these athletes for going and question them for going and participating in these events, because the leaders in this world, they're the ones that have to do stuff about this, and they're not. Look at the business deals they're doing with all this. Like, even the NHL and the NBA, they're constantly trying to work in with China. They don't care.
Sent the Canucks and the LA Kings to China just a couple years ago.
Yeah. Okay, right? But when we talk about, you know, we got a text here from GURP in Vancouver saying, when the responsibility of defending human rights falls to individuals making consumer decisions, he who has the most dollars to make those decisions gets the biggest say. That's not it. The greater responsibility must be taken by governments sanctioning these greasy organizations and nations. And GURP, you're 100% right. But how do those governments change? If people, me and you, care. Governments don't change just for the sake of change. If I or a group of people say, hey, this is not right, guys, take a stand. Government, take a stand. My local MP, take a stand. That's how they wake up. They live off of votes, just like everybody else. And if their constituents are saying, this is not right, that's the only way governments change their voice, too. So it does kind of fall on us.
It does fall on us to a certain extent. And, you know, sports is just so ingrained in our culture and who we are now. Like, it's part of what we do, right? It's our, we're making a living off of it. All three of us here sitting and talking about it. It's reality. It has become big business. The sport washing part of it is the hard part, because we love sports, right? Collectively as people, we do. It is part of our entertainment. It is, as a lot of us would say, the best reality TV you can find. But why do you think China wants so many Olympic Games? Why do you think they've had it twice in the last 14 years? Because it's a statement of them to the world. Like, hey, look at us. Mm-hmm. Look at what we're doing over here. And that, for World Cups in the past, and certainly, and more so for the Olympics, which every time it's around, it's the biggest television event you can have. That's been a big thing for cities hosting Olympics. Like, you can go all the way back to 1936 Germany, right? And that's the part of it that is really difficult, because a lot of people are just going to be casual about it and watch it no matter what, the same as they would anything. But that's, you know, that's the part of it where the IOC, who, you know, I wouldn't expect them to, but if we're living in the utopian world, says, no, we're not going to do that because this, like, there's a lot here that we just don't agree with that isn't a part of our code of conduct as an Olympic committee. You know, that's, you know, it falls on a lot of people, but them choosing to go to China twice in the last 14 years doesn't help anything either.
No, it doesn't. But I think what has to happen is you got to move forward from it.
Yeah.
Right? So we can talk about protesting. That's great.
And I will say, like, China has, you know, there's been far fewer countries that are willing to take on an Olympic Games
because
in recent years.
In a way, they're giving the IOC
a Ponzi scheme, essentially.
Yes.
Like, people have figured it out finally.
Yeah. Now, I mean, one of the reasons it worked better in Vancouver is because a lot of the cost was in infrastructure, which was much needed here. You know, the Canada Line and also the Sea to Sky and some other things. And that's not the, I'm not justifying. I'm just saying the reason it worked out better here compared to other countries where venues are still empty.
But it's fact, not opinion, that it worked out better in Vancouver than it does for most.
You go to countries like Brazil, I mean, they got empty billion-dollar buildings.
They built They built a soccer stadium in the middle of the Amazon jungle. Like, who needed that?
No, I know. It's absurd. So, I mean, just look at that. That's just sunk costs, right? But moving forward, as far as hockey is concerned, as a consumer, are you cool with never seeing them go to the Olympics if we do a World Cup every 4 years? Should we not? We're a hockey nation. You know, we talk hockey mostly. Let's take the conversation in that direction. I'm cool with never seeing NHL players in Olympics again. I think that you want to make a statement, get out from it, and do your own thing every 4 years. And you can go to Finland 1 year. You can go to Europe or do it like that. You do it in Canada. Do it in North America. You can take it to those. You can take it to a non-traditional country. Do it through the league and do it through a growing the game type of aspect. Wouldn't it be cool if you did the Olympics? I mean, did a World Cup in that sort of way? You try to get into non-traditional markets. What if you hold it in like Singapore or something, or a country, you know, that you would approve of having it in?
I'm cool with it. Like, honestly, I'm cool with it based on the fact that if that means taking a stand on something, absolutely. Change it up. Man, we're talking about real lives for people. We're talking about real life circumstances. Not a game that I love, I get paid to cover, but in a sense, it's also imaginary.
Yeah.
It's a game. We're talking about real life in certain places and rewarding organizations for taking shortcuts. You know, there's a CIA agent hired by the Qataris to spy on people in the FIFA organization and make sure that they would be able to crack down on foreign workers. That's not a game.
Yeah.
It's real life, man.
It's not easy, and it's not going anywhere either, right? FIFA, the IOC, they aren't going anywhere. These sorts of things happen all the time. It's up to you to decide when your moral compass takes over your love for sport and what you're willing to do about it. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. We are the People's Show. Coming back, Yannick Hansen from earlier today on Sportsnet 650.
You're listening to The People's Show with Sat, Dan, and Randeep on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
A lot of reaction to that conversation. Steven and Delta, the NHL doesn't own hockey. The IIHF does, so it's not quite as easy as seeing the NHL needs to do X, Y, and Z. It's quite a bit more complicated. That's Steven in Delta. I think referencing your thought of don't go to the Olympics anymore, Sat. Just keep doing your World Cup of hockey.
With obviously you work with the International Ice Hockey Federation and figure some stuff out. And yes, as somebody else pointed out too, the ease of having the Olympics makes it easier for maybe the IIHF and the other leagues to want to participate in. But here's the thing. They've done it before.
Yeah.
There's been a World Cup. Like the NHL had one, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like you work with the, you can do it. They've done it. There's been Canada Cups. There's been World Cups in the past. Like there is an avenue to do it. You don't have to go to the Olympics to have best on best. We've seen it in the past. You can do it again.
And they wanted to build it out You know, they rushed the 2016 World Cup. That's they didn't have time for qualifying and everything else. That's why they had the gimmicky teams of North America U23s and Team Europe. It didn't go over as well as they had hoped. But the plan was, let's have this one, and then we're going to build it out. We'll have qualifying, get more countries in, and move forward from there and really try to build on it. But every time they've had a World Cup, even going all the way back to 96 and 2004, you know, they've just been one-offs, right? You have to build on it. Yeah, you have to make it something that's regular so people can get behind it. That just hasn't happened. Love the text, though. Love the interaction. Appreciate that on the Dunbar Lumber text line.
One thing I will mention. So, because somebody mentioned, you know, anti-Asian climate that exists as well. Any conversation about the Chinese government, and we're talking about human rights issues, is just directed at that.
Yes.
Never mistake that for any sort of anti-Asian sentiment or anything. And I think it is always important, especially in the climate, it's true, to make that very, very clear. This is a sentiment only directed at the government and those that are making human rights transgressions.
It's the People Show, Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. Before we listen back to Yannick Hansen, some interesting Canucks news today coming down as Travis Hamonic was loaned back to the Abbotsford Canucks.
I'm not playing the sounder, Dan. I'm not playing it.
I was going to say, you could even call it breaking news.
Yes. It was breaking at the time.
I mean, multiple things can be true at the same time. Yes, it
news
was
occurred.
A story that broke. But no, it was not a story that necessitated the breaking news sounder to get people's attention to that degree.
I want to actually quote what Reach said. The Canucks have made a transaction. That is misleading, man.
Facts only. The Canucks
misleading.
It was a fact. Canucks made a transaction. Travis Hamonic back to the Abbotsford Canucks.
Yes.
They loaned him back.
It is better than some of the other breaking news sounders that we have played in the past, or
okay.
You've made me play
but, you know,
in the past.
Bar is
so I'll give you that.
Low.
I'll
that
give
doesn't
you that.
Make it
no,
good, guys.
You know what? You know where he made the error is when he said we have Canucks breaking news. You know what I mean? Because sometimes we do breaking news and it's cheesy and it's a joke. It's like, oh yeah, people laugh it off. But because
every time I do breaking news, it's for real. Like I don't.
Ian Cole getting
cheesy.
Traded to Minnesota is not breaking news. Dmitry Kulikov signing with the New Jersey Devils is not
breaking news. No,
for you it is.
Like sometimes you
your
do.
Your standard is low.
Like I get it if you do it in jest, for instance. Like, oh, something completely stupid. But you made it like, oh, we got Canucks, breaking news.
Transaction.
The Canucks have made
a transaction. That was leading.
When I say transaction, who's thinking Jim Benning has just been fired?
Read the room, man.
Yeah, that was very, that was very sensational of you.
So no management changes yet for the Vancouver Canucks, but Travis Hamonic has been loaned back to the Abbotsford Canucks, which, look, raised a lot of eyebrows, I think, around the Lower Mainland in that. And didn't they just call him up? I thought he was going to be ready to play. What's this roster move all about? Why is Travis Hamonic going back to the Abbotsford Canucks, and why is he not playing games with the Vancouver Canucks?
So my understanding is that simply a coach's decision. And when this transaction came down, Dan, that was my initial reaction. Like, having a conversation with somebody, I kind of got the sense that Hamonic wasn't going to be playing in the game on Saturday. Now, I did not anticipate he was going to be put on waivers today, be sent loaned to Abbotsford today. I did not see that coming.
Yeah.
But I was told not to expect to see Hamonic playing because the coach doesn't believe he's up to speed after having the flu, and the Canucks have won two games in a row. And, you know, coaches winning lineups and this team has only won back-to-back games once the season before they did so the other night in Ottawa. So obviously they don't want to rock the boat. And I do think a lot of this is just trying to get Hamonic up to speed again because he's missed some time yet again and all this sort of stuff. And to the question of waivers, the Canucks are not claiming anybody on waivers. That's my understanding, that they're not doing this to get Cale Clegg. That's not happening. It's simply because they can make this transaction. They're not playing him, and they're just doing it for now.
It's just weird, though, because he was recalled this morning. And he's sent back later today.
Yeah.
Like, it's And then within those hours, maybe the conversation shifted, maybe he's not ready, whatever it is. But it's the rare, all right, he's being recalled in the morning, and then we have a change of heart. That's why it's a little head scratcher.
But the one thing I will say, though, is there are cap reasons to do that as well.
Mm.
There are. Like day-to-day cap savings and all this sort of stuff, even though you're into LTIR, there are considerations in play for those sort of things as well. I don't know all the ins and outs for it, but because he doesn't have to go on waivers right now and because they have the opportunity to do so, it's one of those things where it probably helps you on your books for a few days. Because if you're not playing him this game and maybe not even playing him, say, on Monday,
yeah,
then you save that on your books for a few days.
So with Luke Shen playing so well next to Quinn Hughes, what becomes the roster move when Hamonic is ready to come back into the lineup? Does Burrows go out? I would assume that's the obvious one, given contract.
Well,
but
you still have also, you know, the contract makes sense, right?
But Tucker Pullman comes
Brad
out of the
still
lineup.
Kicking around.
Like, Pullman's not going on waivers or anything, but
no.
Would he come out of the lineup?
Yeah, I still think it's Burrows, guys.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm just looking at it from the ice time. Pullman still played more on the PK than any other Canuck defenseman.
Yep.
The other night. Just based on usage, I don't know.
Brad Hunt on waivers? Maybe they don't want to lose the right shot D-man in Kyle Burrows?
Yeah, but you don't exactly have that many on the left either, though, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like you're getting one player to play outside of their natural position, which is the right-hand side with Kyle Burrows. So
The
left is not exactly a ideal situation either. And I know, you know, Luke Shen can be moved around a little bit, but Quinn Hughes is playing well with him.
Yeah,
so why would you move him around?
Shen's not coming out.
Around in the lineup, like in a different pairing. You're not doing that right now.
It's Pullman or Burrows, right? I mean, maybe if the coach really, you know, thinks Hamonic can just take over Pullman's role on the PK because Hamonic plays on the PK, maybe, you know, that lends, you know, gives you a reason because Burrows has been playing the left side as a righty and has been doing so okay in a third pair role. So, you know, that could be. I mean, I guess you could, but my guess would still be on Burrows coming out of the lineup if they go to Hamonic.
All right. We talked to Yannick Hansen about the success of Luke Shen and much more in our earlier conversation. But we started it off asking Yannick how he sees the Canucks' last two wins over Montreal and Ottawa, respectively.
Everybody can look at the standing and see where those teams are situated. Those are teams they should be beating. It's the teams they're expecting to beat. Now we're going to be seeing a little more the teams you should be competing against here the next five or six games. It's teams that are pedaling right in that playoff threshold. So it'll be a good test to see if they've turned some sort of corner. They did play well in Boston. They did play well in Columbus as well. So they have generated more than just one or two games now of good hockey. They didn't get the results in those two games, but they were starting to play a little more consistency and had more guys chipping in as well, where throughout the bad stretches, if you will, there are very few guys going. It seemed that more and more guys are starting to catch on a little bit more, pitching in, scoring, whatever you will. So it seems like they might have turned a little bit of a corner. Whether or not it's a fluke, next couple of games here will show.
Well, I think for it not to be a fluke, Yannick, ultimately they're going to have to get Besser and Pedersen to be more like the players we've seen them be in the past, and they're not quite there yet. So when we assess their play, and you mentioned the trend they've been on, even the games they've lost recently, what will their best look like if and when, I guess it's a big if right now, you get Besser and Pedersen going?
Yeah, and that's the thing. We've seen they've been playing well these last couple of games now. Those two games are not, I wouldn't say not part of it, but they're not really a part of it as much as some of the other guys. It was still a lot of the usual suspects, if you will. Ottawa, Garland had a hell of a game. Miller had a hell of a game. Quinn had a hell of a game. Even Luke Shen showed up on a score sheet. But again, it was the same guy. And those three guys I just mentioned, those aren't the guys that we've been missing. They have been pitching in through the entire year. But we saw Bo, we saw Tanner Pearson a little bit more now. Pod Colson, Höglander are still doing their things. They're not getting a ton of production. but they're generating stuff out there. It looks like they're engaged in the game. So again, a couple more guys getting involved, but again, obviously Besser and Petey, like you need those two at top of the game, contributing, creating matchup trouble, whatever you will. And again, we're not quite seeing it from those two. Again, getting them involved as well will only help them. And again, kind of show us what kind of team they are. This is, again, it's hard to judge a team when so many guys are off. It would be nice to see them clicking and again, doing it over an extended period of time, running into good teams, beating good teams when good team plays well as well. So there's a lot of little things that you'd like to see. Obviously, a lot of things need to go right for Vancouver right now. But again, the last four games here, they've taken some steps in the right direction.
Well, you talked about Luke Shen there, and yeah, he kind of channeled his inner Kevin Bieksa back in his prime, went for a little skate there, made a little move and got the goal. But, you know, Luke Shen playing next to Quinn Hughes just seems like it fits better than Tucker Pullman. It feels like Shen is a little bit more consistent, knows his role, doesn't really try to do too much, whereas Tucker Pullman sometimes takes the unnecessary chance. Would you agree?
Yeah, so again, it's tough to... Luke Shen, I thought he had a tough game in Montreal. Some costly, or not costly, but some turnovers that turned into big opportunities against. Again, he's more of a type of player I'd like to see like next to Hughes than Pullman. Luke Shen provides something that I'd say just about nobody else on this team provide. He provides some toughness. Quinn doesn't have to worry about getting his face washed in front of the net because he will step in. Again, he has that little mean streak to him, not little. He finishes checks hard as well. He will fight just about anybody. So again, I like that type of defenseman. If you're playing with Quinn Hughes, you might see 20 some minutes a night. I don't think we want Shen out there for that much. So it is a tough situation, but again, he fits a little bit better than Pullman, that for sure. Maybe not every minute out there with him, but definitely look like it's something they can build on a little bit.
One thing I always find interesting, Yannick, is, I mean, we always talk about doing things differently, but doing things differently doesn't always mean better results. It just means you could have tried something different than what you saw. And I know it's easy to look at Pullman, and I think he has struggled, obviously, but what is it sometimes that we see guys play a sheltered third pair role and you see a guy and you're like, this guy's really good, but he's playing a sheltered role. He's playing 12, 13 minutes and he looks fantastic doing so. But then once he gets elevated, it's a lot harder to do those things. Just because somebody is playing a bigger role doesn't mean that somebody else was not playing that role would give you better results. Or do you think the coaches have a good grasp of that and not playing Burroughs, say, more than Pullman?
Again, it's as soon as you get elevated, you see different matchups. I know we look at teams and these team plays against each other, but that's not the case. If you start boiling it down, matchups are so key. And if you're playing a sheltered minutes, well, you will see the other third and fourth line, which aren't as good offensively. They won't get as many shots on net. They won't get the same quality shots. You won't get scored on as often. Chances are you're going to be pushing the puck the other way. So there's a lot of things that goes into that. Like as soon as you get elevated, it's kind of like trial by fire. Can you play at this level? Can you play? Because it's not just playing in the NHL. There's playing 10 minutes in the bottom six and there's playing 20 minutes in the top six in the NHL. And those are two completely different sports almost. So it does take a lot once you elevate or put a guy down a couple of lines, whether you will. So it is definitely, you got to see if you have your game. And again, once you're playing top six, you can't just be expected to throw it off the glass and out. No, these guys are going to be expecting to get the puck on your tape, not in your feet so it goes the other way and you get scored on. It's one of those things where all of a sudden you're playing a faster game, more detailed game. Pressure comes from being on the ice with guys that expect to be scoring, but they also expect you to be contributing. Can't just be out there and throw up my, okay, I'm out here with four really good players here. Let's just, you guys take the puck and I'll just worry about myself. No, you still got to join in and all of a sudden, maybe you're playing a game you're not familiar with, you're not used to, and that's when guys get out of their depth.
What'd you think of JT Miller's goal the other night?
Yeah, if his name would have been McDavid, we would have seen it everywhere. But again, he plays in Vancouver and is not named that. So again, it's exactly the same thing. He walks right through three or four guys and scores. Great to see. Wish he would get a little bit more recognition. Other players do it once in a while too, not once a month. But again, tremendous to see.
Yeah, it was. And we've really felt it this year, given, you know, Pettersson being kind of in the doldrums for so long and still waiting to see him really get back to his former self. But JT has really emerged as a player that is so, so important. But given the results, you know, obvious trade rumors are going to continue flying around the city and speculation about the future of the core. When it comes to JT Miller, is that a player you think the Canucks have to keep?
Well, I think you have 20, 30 games here to figure that out. First of all, you're going to play the next 20, 30 games here. Obviously, like, they matter a lot. And you're going to see if the first 20 games we saw were a fluke or whatever you will, and can they turn a corner and be the team we expected them to be? If they are the latter, where we're okay, they're playing pretty good now, they're playing at a pace where they would have been a shoe into playoff spot, you're keeping him, no question. You keep building through the next year, hope for the best towards the end of the year. If we keep pedaling around mediocrity and things aren't going well, again, the direction is what the team will rebuild, retool. Those are all consideration that goes into what you're doing. But again, the last thing is asset management. If you're looking for some sort of build, you need to get something for your valued players. And whenever the value is at the highest, it's normally at the deadline. Everybody knows that teams will overpay for just about anything at that time. So again, that's probably the time you're going to take a look at it. And that's also a time where you know what direction you're going as a team, not just for this year, but for the next two or three years.
Well, the question, too, is, you know, there are a lot of guys, whether it's JT, there's Bo, and there's got to be big decisions made, right? Because only 1 year left on their deals. Bo, JT, and then RFA, who's Brock Besser at the end of the season. Not only is it a question of what you want to do, when it comes to JT and Bo, isn't the bigger question what they want, if you even want to keep them beyond the next couple of years?
I don't know what kind of protection they have in their deal, but at that moment, it's up to the club, general manager, ownership. What do you want to do? And if you're looking at a retool, rebuild, then you got to move them. If you're looking to, okay, we just got to make the playoff next year, then you got to keep them. It all depends what direction gets passed down from this point. It's probably from Francesco. If he's in, oh, we want to make the playoff, we want to compete, then you're keeping them, no question. And you're trying to add some pieces that'll help them pushing in that direction. If it's Jim or somebody else that comes in and says, no, this is a longer deal here, it's going to take us 3 or 4 years, kind of have to start not quite over, but again, a lot of new faces, then you got to move them. Again, you got to keep looking at the age number. It's not the most important thing, but when you are rebuilding a team, that they do need to fit a certain criteria. Mm-hmm. This league is getting younger and younger. So if you're planning on competing, you don't want a bunch of 32, 33, 34-year-olds at that time. No, you want them in their mid-20s, late 20s the latest. So they have a couple of years with that window open.
There is Yannick Hansen from earlier on in the People's Show. You can get every edition of the People's Show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and now on Spotify as well. So if you miss any editions or any minutes, any not saying, just saying, always get it on podcast. Subscribe, leave a review.
Yeah, we didn't have enough time to get in your 2021 Wrapped, you know, minutes yes. Listened to and all that. The numbers were still low because we're still new. But next year, 2022 Wrapped. It'll be about the People Show.
Wow. Yeah. I'm all for it. How many minutes did you guys listen to?
Ooh. Oh, I don't know. I didn't check my Wrapped.
So my Spotify account, like, for some reason, it crapped out halfway through the year. Mm. So I didn't have a total read on it, man. Yeah. Didn't have a total read on it.
I mostly just listen to podcasts. Like, I don't listen to a lot of Yeah. Really? Music generally?
So. I'm all Punjabi music. No rap even. It's all really? Punjabi. I don't know what it is. I'm in that phase. Last year, I've been just cranking out the Punjabi music.
Nice. I listened to, so I, when my thing came out, the rap that went through it, I listened to 41 genres.
41 genres
of music, yes. Okay. And I like to listen to a bit of everything, mostly rap though, but I had over 40,000 minutes listened to.
Wow.
It's a lot of minutes.
Like, I'll usually just throw on one random playlist while I'm in the gym or something, but that's a lot of 41. Minutes.
Okay, I do it on, like, my way home from work is when my Spotify time comes on. On the way in, I'm listening to podcasts and radio, of course, but, like, my Spotify time is when I'm out for a walk or something or driving home.
Yeah. 41,000 minutes. How much millions does Max Scherzer make in 41,000 minutes?
That's so I quickly did the math on it just hours wise. So I spent 27 days in the past
full
year
month almost
listening. Full month almost.
Like the month of February.
So like the month of February Sat was listening to music.
Music and podcasts.
It's brilliant. That's pretty good.
At one time speed. That's the most important part.
Yes, one time speed.
You got to go 1.5.
Man, you guys are freaks for this.
Honestly, Elliot Friedman and Jeff Merrick sound normal to me at 1.5 speed.
You do 1.5?
Yeah.
I can't do 1.5.
No.
Yeah, next time you talk to Elliot in person, whenever that is, you're going to be freaked out. It's going to be normal.
What's wrong with you, Elliot? That's it.
Why are you talking so slow?
He's like, what? He didn't think he was going to be having a stroke or something. Poor guy.
That'll do it for this week on The People's Show. Always get us on podcasts. We do appreciate it. Leave those reviews. We'll read them out on the show. For producer Joel Gaudette and Josh Elliott Wolf, my co-host Satyar Sean Randeep Janda, I'm Dan Riccio. We are The People's Show. We cannot be The People's Show without you, the people. Enjoy your weekends. This is Sportsnet 650.